Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. And now to the origins of an enduring political myth, the Muslim no-go zone, referred to not for the first time by Steve Emerson, terrorist analyst for Fox News.
In Britain, it's not just no-go zones. There are actual cities like Birmingham that are totally Muslim, where non-Muslims just simply don't go in.
And that was followed swiftly by the somewhat restrained ire of British Prime Minister David Cameron.
When I heard this, frankly, I choked on my porridge and I thought it must be April Fool's Day. This guy is clearly a complete idiot.
Then came a series of on-air apologies, pretty uncharacteristic for the Fox network.
Over the course of this last week, we have made some regrettable errors on air.
We apologize.
We apologize.
We apologize.
We deeply regret these errors and apologize to the people of Birmingham, our viewers and all who've been offended.
Well, the mayor of Paris, for one, was not appeased and announced that the city would sue Fox for a similar slur. Still, the notion that certain urban zones have become no-go areas for non-Muslims persists. It's even gaining momentum in some circles. David Graham covers political and global news for The Atlantic, and he did a sort of forensic trace of the myth to better understand why it endures and joins us now to tell us what he found. David Graham, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So who first came up with this term, the Muslim no-go zones?
So as far as I can tell, the first example of this appearing anywhere is in a blog post by Daniel Pipes, who's a writer who writes a lot about radical Islam. And he suggested that there are these zones. This was back in 2006. What's interesting is he has since recanted, and he says, you know, when you go to these places, they're a little bit rough, but they're nothing that an American who'd been to the Bronx or Detroit wouldn't recognize. Mm. Still, despite that, the myth has endured and grown since then.
Well, it was brought up a lot after the Charlie Hebdo shootings and the standoff in Parisian Delhi that followed. Slapped down pretty quickly. But is there any truth to the claim that there are Muslim no-go zones in European cities, or America for that matter?
There's no such thing as a no-go zone that I have seen or that anybody else has proven. Now, there are some interesting facts that underlie it. So, for example, there are places where ad hoc Sharia squads are going around and trying to encourage people to dress more modestly or not drink alcohol. This is happening in Britain, among other places. There are slums in France that have been designated special zones. And there are places where the government is concerned about low education, low employment rates, low incomes, high rates of public housing. And so they've made a special emphasis there. Those are called special urban zones. Some people have equated these special urban zones with no-go zones, but they're really two different things. And in fact, they're areas the government is focusing on. There also you see stories about really atrocious anti-Semitic comments in certain neighborhoods and places in Western Europe. So you can see how all of these little strands combine suggest that there are no-go zones, but as for an actual no-go zone, it's not really a thing.
You also wrote about some somewhat parallel legal systems operating in some places in Europe. Tell us about those.
Well, that's right. There are cases in Britain. Britain, this has been particularly controversial. There are family courts that run – there are sort of Sharia family courts. So you can deal with divorce and other issues, domestic disputes through these courts. There are also systems for many years there's been a Jewish court system. And this is a case where if both parties agree, rather than going into the secular legal system, you can adjudicate a dispute that way. People are upset about that. I mean, they say that it's the imposition of Sharia law. There are questions about whether these courts do enough to protect women's rights. But there's something that's been set up by the state and has existed for a while.
When I read about this, I thought about the semi-autonomous Orthodox Jewish communities in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, for example, or among the Amish, who, that also have a sort of parallel legal system, at least in civil and familial and family cases. Is that a fair comparison?
I think that's a very fair comparison. I heard from people about Christian courts in the United States. You get similar courts in the U.S. where disputes can be resolved that way. So I think it's exactly the right comparison.
Well, I want to go back to this sensitive urban zone designation. There are, of course, areas surrounding Paris and neighborhoods in Marseille, for example, where you would not want to go, correct?
I guess it depends on the time of day and what you're doing. You know, they're rough neighborhoods. They're places that are poor and there are high crime rates. And often that has more to do with a coincidence with religion than with anything else. So they tend to be full of immigrants who are not as well educated, and employment opportunities are not as great. It's not exactly a product of Islam. It's a product of poverty more than anything. And you see the French government making efforts to improve services there, to increase education, and really to renew those urban zones.
A similar question was put to Louisiana Governor and, we might add, potential presidential hopeful Bobby Jindal. Now here he is speaking to CNN's Max Foster in London.
There are people here in London that will tell you there are neighborhoods where the women don't feel safe walking through those neighborhoods without veils. There are neighborhoods where the police are less likely to go. That's a dangerous thing.
You need to give me, to make an assertion like that, you need to give me the area so we can look at it, because I haven't heard of one.
Oh, well, look, I think your viewers know absolutely there are places where the police are less likely to go. They absolutely know there are neighborhoods where they wouldn't feel comfortable. They wouldn't feel comfortable with their
wives, their daughters, their sisters. Well, that's high crime rates, except that they feel uncomfortable. It's not because there are too many Muslims there.
Now, this was said after the Fox News apology, and Jindal has since not only refused to acknowledge an inaccuracy of the claim, but has actually doubled down on it. He reiterated it last week on Washington Week. So what's going on here? Why is this persisting with Bobby Jindal, at least?
Well, there are a couple things going on. I mean, I think Jindal is trying to position himself for a potential presidential run as somebody who would be tough on radical Islam and who would not tolerate this sort of thing. So that's the domestic political dimension. The other thing is that once these myths take root, they're very hard to get out. So sure, Fox News had these impressive apologies and was very clear about it. But of course, that's after a week of many viewers hearing the comments. If you repeat these things over and over, they're going to get ingrained. And so it's much easier to start a rumor than it is to debunk one effectively. And it's interesting when you see these myths spring up in particularly in ideological media, they just repeat and repeat and repeat, and you get a sort of echo chamber.
Do you think actually the Fox News apology may in some way have added fuel to the fire?
It's quite possible it has. There's very interesting political science research on this sort of psychology of myths. And one of the things that researchers have found is that sometimes debunking a statement actually increases people's belief in it. So if they have a sort of ideological connection to a statement, like the idea that there are Muslim no-go zones, and you tell them there aren't, they're skeptical of that statement, and it tends to really encourage their belief and redouble it.
So what happens with your article, David Graham? I mean, you look through the origins of this. You find some grains of truth that metastasize into this kind of a myth. Are you somehow underscoring it?
I worry that I am, yeah. I don't, and I think it's a difficult position because I want to be in a place where I'm telling people the truth, and I'm making clear that something that a major public figure and a person in a position of public trust is saying things that are not true and are mistakes. On the other hand, by repeating them and by giving them more oxygen, I'm only giving them more air. And by debunking them, I'm potentially giving people reason to believe that I'm part of a media conspiracy to cover these things up. Certainly the emails I've received since I wrote the article, some of them have suggested that.
Well, David Graham, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
David Graham is staff writer for The Atlantic, and you'll find a link to read his article, Why the No-Go Zone Myth Won't Die, at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. And when Word of Mouth continues, we'll tackle a very different kind of origin story, the humble and fascinating beginnings of Gatorade. That's after the break.